Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this meeting of Midlothian Council, the 16th of August 2016, which we broadcast live to the internet. I would like to remind everyone present that this meeting will be broadcast live to the internet, will be stored as part of the Council's webcast archive, and will be capable of repeated viewing. I have the discretion to terminate or suspend filming if, in my opinion, allowing filming to continue would prejudice the proceedings of the meeting. Equally so, items that are heard in private or items whereby the public publication of the webcast may interfere with the debate, then these areas of the webcast will not be made available to the public. Members are reminded that the cameras are activated by the sound system and it must switch on microphones when speaking and off when finished speaking. You have apologies for absence.
Thanks, Provost. I've received apologies from Councillor Parry.
Thank you. Order of business.
Thanks, Provost. The order of business is as per the agenda that's been previously circulated.
Okay, members are reminded that if they have any declaration of interest on any items on the agenda, they may do so at any time during the meeting. There are no deputations. The minutes of the previous meetings, a note of the meeting of the Midlothian Council of the 17th of May submitted for approval as a correct record. Can I have a mover and a seconder for these minutes? Councillor Rosie to move. Councillor Johnson to second. Note of the meeting of Midlothian Council of the 28th of June. We have a mover and seconder, please. Mover, Councillor Johnson, seconded by Councillor Constable. The minutes of the Midlothian Integration Joint Board are just for noting. There are no questions to the Council Leader. We have one motion by Councillor Baxter and seconded by Councillor Pottinger.
Thank you, Provost. Midlothian's a much more diverse community than when I arrived here 35 years ago. I've met many residents who originate not just from south of the border, like myself, but from many European countries, Americans, Australians, indeed, from all four corners of the world. I'm also proud that we in Midlothian are now providing a safe refuge to some of those fleeing the utmost horrors in the conflict of Syria. In turn, more people brought up in Midlothian are moving beyond its borders, some permanently and some who return. Change can be unsettling and bring uncertainty, but Midlothian is also a tolerant community, welcoming everyone willing to contribute to our diversity and culture. However, we must not be complacent. Hate crimes in England and Wales and Northern Ireland were up 20% in July compared to a year ago. And although no reported increase has been found in Scotland, there have been reports of isolated incidents of people abused on buses in Edinburgh and neo-Nazi stickers appearing in Glasgow. This motion, Provost, was prompted by contact from a constituent and is being presented as an opportunity for us to reaffirm our commitment to diversity in Midlothian, to reject messages of hate from wherever they come, and to reassure those from different backgrounds living and working in or just visiting Midlothian that they're welcome here. I'm therefore very pleased to propose this motion, and I thank Councillor Pottinger, Midlothian's Equalities Champion, who's kindly agreed to second it.
Thank you. Councillor Pottinger.
Yes, as Councillor Baxter said, we do generally live in a diverse and tolerant society, and Midlothian Council is always on the side of fair and equal treatment. Though some may try to prevent this with their intolerant and their hate-filled views, Midlothian continues to work with the agencies and organisations throughout Midlothian. Refugees and immigration was debated at the Midlothian People's Equality Group's AGM, and we had a good debate on the issues. And and this group does help to contribute to address equality matters in the grassroots organisations. Midlothian Council will educate our children, remove racist graffiti, and there was recent racist graffiti and neo-Nazi symbols in Midlothian, and I thank the officers for moving that very promptly. We support diversity at every opportunity, and there's too many to mention. All our policies are subject to the quality impact assessments, and we work with the agencies, and I appreciate the work of the key agency and the police on many of these issues. Our commitment to this motion is shown in many forms. We do all this to ensure that we do not allow xenophobia, racism and hate to get a hold in our society. But yes, we can do more.
Thank you. Is the motion passed by Council? Thank you. Before we move on to the public reports, I was tasked at the last Council meeting to write to the Consul General of France regarding the attack in Nice, which I did so, and I got the approval of the letter through Dr. Smith. Unfortunately, during the recess, there was a couple of other attacks in other countries, and I took it upon myself to write to the Consul Generals of Japan and to the Consul General of Germany, Herr Voss. Again, I asked for the letters to be approved by Dr. Smith. I hope that's okay with the Council. Thank you. We move on to the item 8.1, schedule of meeting dates 2016-17 for General Purposes Committee, a report by Mr. Blair, the Director, Resources.
Thanks, Provost. Briefly, this report proposes rescheduling two meetings of the Council's General Purposes Committee. The details are set out in Section 2, and Council is requested to approve the recommendations as detailed in Section 4. Thanks, Provost.
Councillor Coventry.
Yeah, thanks, Provost. I just want to move the recommendations, which seem to me the sensible thing to do, and I hope Council agrees with that.
Councillor Johnson.
Sorry, I second the recommendations.
Councillor Young.
Thanks, Provost. It's not so much to move anything, more just a reflection that maybe will be useful in terms of just thinking about doing our bit in terms of supporting a broad range of views in local government. There are councillors who work or have study commitments or who might have childcare commitments or any range of other things alongside council duties, which people make time for. And I suppose my only reflection is that sometimes stability of timing is quite a useful thing in terms of being able to arrange timetables or childcare or work or whatever around council duties. So knowing that something is going to be at 2 o'clock means that, for example, you can arrange with your employers or whatever that works as a general rule. So as I say, I don't particularly want to move anything on this paper, just a reflection that I thought might be of some use in future when looking at these things.
Okay, can we take that on board? Okay, thank you. Any otherwise minded for item 8.1? Thank you. 8.2, parking in Midlothian, report by Mr. Muffett, Head of Commercial Operations.
Thanks, Provost. This report comes forward to give an update to Council in terms of where we are in promoting a decriminalised parking scheme within Midlothian. Under Section 2.1, I've reiterated the previous decisions from the August 15 Council that allowed officers to progress decriminalised parking. In Section 2.2, I've given an update on where we are with the Traffic Warden Service as is, which will go through to March 2017. In terms of stages of implementation under 2.3, the audit of the traffic regulation orders was quite a bit of work. This was looking at traffic regulation orders that go back some 60, 70 years. They've been on since then. So we've looked at them. We've made a number of improvements, and these will come forward in due course. But as a consequence, we need to upgrade our markings and signings. And one of the recommendations is that I'm asking for approximately £100,000 to upgrade these signs and markings to a standard that we require to have in place prior to submitting a bid to Scottish Government to approve our decriminalised parking scheme. The next two or three items under 2.3 are all progressing quite well, and they're all being done in parallel, and that includes option appraisals to look at what the restrictions are currently, what perhaps should be varied. It would also look at the number of traffic wardens that we would put in place and over what period of each week. It will also look at, and is looking at, car parks and also what, if any, charges should be implemented both in car parks and on street, and indeed whether anything should change from that's currently in place. Information from the first two issues have been put together, which are forming the basis of the business case, and that's, as I say, that's what will go forward to Transport Scotland. Just kind of when we talk about changes to on-street signs and markings, it's just to make members aware that this isn't a kind of once-in-a-lifetime opportunity when we do agree whatever scheme that may be taken forward. There's always an annual review. So, for example, whatever we may agree or take forward from April next year is reviewed and can be amended. So it's just to bear that in mind. We've had further discussions with City of Edinburgh Council firming up on some of the option appraisals and the likely costs. And we've also set up a multidisciplinary council group that's looked at all the issues that perhaps could arise as a consequence of bringing decriminalised parking forward. In 2.3, I've extended the timetable, which gives a kind of brief outline of progress to date and where we are and the various steps that we've still to take forward. Coming to the estimated costs, as I've said already, as well as looking for £100,000 for markings, we previously are utilising £150,000 to take the scheme forward in terms of the feasibility, etc. And following the discussions we've had with the City of Edinburgh, I've outlined there that the estimated cost of bringing in decriminalised parking on an annual basis is up to £200,000 per year. That excludes any income, but as I say, that would come from each of the options that are being considered, and then ultimately whichever option it is that's introduced. So can I turn into the recommendations? Council has recommended to continue to support the view that decriminalised parking will give the most effective enforcement regime in the long term. Agree to have the remedial works to signing markings undertaken within the current financial year, and agree to allocate for future years £200,000 for the operation of a decriminalised scheme, and further reports to Council will be brought forward. I should add that in terms of the further reports, it is my intention to have a seminar of the Council, and I'll give more details of that as and when, and that will give the Council to consider the various options that will come forward, and then we'll follow that with a Council report in due course. And I'll pause at that point, Provost.
Councillor Rosie.
Thanks, Provost. Thanks for that, Ricky. You know, as Ricky has said, at our meeting on the 11th of August 2015, we agreed to continue with the existing traffic warden service, and we agreed that decriminalisation parking offered the most effective parking enforcement regime in the long term. We have since agreed to retain the traffic warden to 31/7/17, and that's met from the existing budget. We are seeing increased headlines throughout Midlothian of bad and inconsiderate parking in the town centres and around schools, etc. And I think this shows that doing nothing is not really an option. There's no guarantee that the single traffic warden that we have will continue. And to be honest, I don't think it's working as well as certainly I would have hoped. So just to to go over, summarise on the recommendations. They include to continue to support a decriminalised parking approach, agreeing remedial works and approving supplementary estimate of £100,000 for 2016-17 and allocating £200,000 in the annual revenue budget from 2017-18 for annual operating costs and to seek a further report from the Director of Resources following the completion of the feasibility study and online business case. It should be noted that the £200,000, I think as Ricky has said, that's the top figure it should be, and that parking enforcement will be option. There will be options put before members to consider, which will include methods of parking enforcement and the costs aligned to each one. And therefore, I would move that we agree the recommendations at 4 in the report.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson.
I agree with Derek, because good parking behaviour is not always evident in Midlothian, in our towns and our villages. Traffic congestion and bad parking can cost lives, so I agree that we should go ahead with these proposals. So I second these proposals, these recommendations, sorry.
Thank you. Councillor Imrie.
Thanks very much, Provost. I did want to actually move as an addendum that we write to COSLA to get the kind of figures throughout Scotland about how much it's costing councils that are going down this particular route. And the reason for that is I'll go on to explain why, and I would hope that the administration can accept that. When Police Scotland was set up, one of the first tasks of Sir Stephen House was to actually instruct people to pull the plug on parking. Now, we had enjoyed, up and down Scotland right up until then, a parking regime that had meant that Police Scotland or the police boards were in charge of that. And I think now, I'm not moving against what we're doing, but what I want to do is highlight the kind of cost impact for a small authority like Midlothian Council. And I accept that some of the costs are one-off, Provost, and I accept that the £200,000 in the paper is an estimate at this moment in time. But nevertheless, £450,000 is now going to be expended from Midlothian out of a budget that's pretty tight in the first place. And when we're looking for savings here, there and everywhere, that's an extra cost to the authority. Now, with the best will in the world, if we had a £30 ticket, if we have when the system comes in, you'd actually, to cover the £200,000, you're talking circa 7,000 tickets a year. Now, I defy anybody to think that we're going to get that many tickets issued. So, in a sense, we're going to have to pay for it anyway. What happened before, Provost, was that with the police undertaking parking, it was in the public sector. We're now going out and we're privatising. So let's not pretend about this. By the actions of the chief constable at that time, who's now away and been given a knighthood, may I hasten to ask, we now have a situation where we've privatised a service that had always been in the public sector as long as I can remember. And it kind of galls me in a way that we've now changed the rules as well. And I know Ricky will accept this, that before, because Midlothian would never go down a decriminalised parking regime, one of the points was that you wouldn't have got it through Transport Scotland. And the reason why you wouldn't get it through there is it either had to wash its face, in other words, be cost neutral, or indeed turn a profit. Now they've changed the rules on that, just because of the actions of that one particular individual. And I just feel that if it's costing £450,000, circa that is, for Midlothian Council, then I would like to get the figures back from all the other authorities. Now, I know, Provost, it might not be as easy as I'm saying, because some of the authorities are just letting things go, and we've got the laissez-faire situation that we have outside this building and all around Midlothian. We're taking action. All I'm saying is it's a heck of a cost for the actions that we're having to take. So all I'm looking for, Provost, having got that out of my system, is actually looking for us just to write to COSLA to see if we can get that information so we can share it. Thanks very much indeed.
Councillor Rosie.
Thanks, Provost. I can't really disagree with a lot most of what Councillor Irmy said there, and I would accept the addendum within the motion that's been put forward, making sure that we get the right wording on it. Thank you. Right.
Okay. Can I ask the clerk to read out the recommendations plus the addendum that's been proposed by Councillor Imrie, and I am assuming that Councillor Rosie is accepting the addendum to the recommendations. Okay.
Thanks, Provost. So the Council is agreeing to continue to support the view that decriminalised parking offers the most effective parking enforcement regime in the long term, agreed that the remedial works to signs and road markings be progressed, and approve a supplementary estimate of £100,000 in 2016-17, agreed to allocate £200,000 to the annual revenue budget from 2017-18 onwards to cover the annual cost of operating a decriminalised parking scheme, and agreed to the Director resources to provide a further report to Council when the outcome of the feasibility study and outline business case are available. Further, agreed to write to COSLA to request the cost for this route from other councils so that we can take a comparison. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, just for the record, can I confirm that Councillor Johnson, who originally seconded the motion, is also seconding the inclusion of the addendum?
Yes, that's correct. I am seconding the addendum.
Okay. Item 8.3, Participatory Budgeting, a report by Dr. Smith, Director of Education, Communities and Economy.
Thank you, Provost. The purpose of this report is to update members on the activities and developments that have taken place in Midlothian regarding participatory budgeting. Members will be aware that PB budgeting is part of the Community Empowerment Act, which seeks to facilitate and ensure that communities have a say in the allocation of resources. The paper to the Council in March 2015 advised that we would pilot models of provision and then introduce a model of provision. Section 2.5 and 2.6 outline the pilot work undertaken in two of our priority communities, Mayfield and Woodburn Dalkeith. Both of these pilots were successful in engaging with local communities and getting their views on the allocation of resources. Both pilots also attracted additional Scottish Government funding to the amount of £38,900. Members will note that Midlothian Council has made an application to the Community Choices Fund for £40,000, with match funding coming from the Small Grants Poverty Fund. Section 3.2 highlights that the Scottish Government has set a target that at least 1% of Council budget is spent using a participatory approach. Section 6, the summary, the participatory budget pilots in Midlothian have shown that there was genuine enthusiasm and participation in local communities regarding the allocation of funding, and that small sums of funding available attracted other funding to our most disadvantaged communities. In Section 7, elected members are asked to consider the recommendations as set out in the paper. And I'm happy to take any questions, and Stephen Birmingham, the Communities Manager, can also answer questions on PB in Midlothian. Thank you.
Councillor Bryant.
Thank you, Provost. Thank you, Mary. Yeah, the pilot that was run from March to May 2016, Mayfield and East Houses, was very successful. It was a match funding of £15,000 from the Council and £15,000 from the Scottish Government. The Scottish Government target, as Mary just said, is that at least 1% overall budget is spent on using participatory budgeting. The allocation of Midlothian over the last year to April 2016 was 0.018%. And I would also like to look at the recommendations. 7.4 is instructing the officers to discuss further with elected members how they could most effectively distribute a proportion or all of the environmental budgets using a PB approach. Thank you.
Councillor Johnson.
Thank you very much. I think this is an excellent way forward to progress working better with our residents and our customers in Midlothian, and it gives an all our communities a better choice and our say in the best way or the right way to distribute funds to their village, the town or the community. And I'm looking forward to working with people to do this. I also think it is a sustainable way for shaping local democracy in Midlothian, and I also propose we accept these recommendations. Thank you.
Any questions, comments? Okay, could the...
Sorry, Chair, again, I don't think Councillor Bryant actually formally moved the motions other than drawing the Council's attention to recommendation four.
Okay, I recommend we accept the proposals.
Could we ask the clerk to read out the recommendations in this report, please?
Thanks, Provost. The Council has agreed to note the policy approach of the Scottish Government to empower communities to participate in decisions on the allocation of resources, to note the update on PB activity in Midlothian, to instruct the Services to Communities Board to identify existing budgets that could be made available for PB, instruct officers to discuss further with elected members how they could most effectively distribute a proportion or all of their environmental budgets using a PB approach, and to have agreed to use any available council funding to apply for match funding from the Community Choices Fund in 2017-18 and beyond. Thank you.
Thank you. We move to item 8.4, Strategic Development Plan for Edinburgh and South East Scotland, SES Plan, the proposed plan, report by Mr Johnson, Head of Communities and Economy.
Thank you, Provost. This report seeks the Council's ratification of the proposed Strategic Development Plan for Edinburgh and South East Scotland. That's number two in terms of strategic plans. The current number one Strategic Development Plan was approved by Scottish Ministers in 2013 and remains operational. It sets the strategic planning framework to 2032, but it will be superseded by the number two plan when it is formally approved, expected to be approved in 2018. In order to meet the requirements to review the plan every 5 years, work started on SES Plan number two in 2015 with the publication of the main issues report, which was brought before this Council for ratification last year. The number two plan will be operational from 2018 to 2030, but also extended to 2038. And that particular date milestone is primarily to do with the housing provision. The responses from the 240 respondents were considered by the Strategic Planning Joint Committee in June, which approved the proposed plan for publication, but that will be subject to ratification by all six councils, constituent councils, and all the other five councils will be considering a report similar to this over the course of the next few weeks. If ratified, the plan will be published for formal notification before being sent to Scottish ministers for approval. In relation to the significant matter of housing provision, which I know councils are particularly concerned about, the relevant part of the proposed plan says that estimates indicate that there is sufficient housing land supply to meet the housing land requirements for the 2018 to 2030 period in East Lothian, Fife, Mid Lothian, Scottish Borders and West Lothian. This is due to the existing land supply set out in the local development plans based on housing requirements in the previous strategic development plan, which in essence means that in the five districts other than Edinburgh, it is considered that there is already sufficient housing land allocated in existing and emerging local development plans to meet the requirements, strategic requirements, to 2030. There are no particular issues of concern which I would raise in relation to Midlothian. This plan provides a sound strategic context for the emerging Midlothian Local Development Plan and subsequent versions of that plan, which will no doubt come forward. So the recommendation, Provost, is that Council ratifies the Edinburgh and South East Scotland proposed strategic development plan.
Thank you, Mr Johnson. Councillor Bryant.
Thank you, Provost. Thank you, Ian. I just want to highlight a couple of things in this report. Paragraph 3.2, the risk. We've mentioned this before in this chamber, that if the plan is not ratified by the six-member authorities, there will be a delay in publishing the plan, when without an up-to-date strategic planning policy context, there are risks for the timeliest progression of the other local development plans. And in paragraph 3.6, the strategic development plan provides strategic guidance and forward planning for investment in future growth and development in the wider city region, including Midlothian, over the time period 2018 to 2038. I move the recommendations.
Councillor Devink.
Yeah, this is quite an exciting development plan, and I very much have pleasure in seconding the recommendation.
Councillor Montgomery. Councillor Mulligan.
Thanks, Provost. Provost, unfortunately, we're not in a position to be able to support this plan at this time. We supported the last development plan coming forward with the same warnings for us that failure to do so would put at risk that the Scottish Government would just come over the top and the reporters unit would simply come in and continue to allocate land for houses, which would be taken out of all democratic control and would effectively ignore what the public will is. However, there are many issues that have been raised by the public out there that we need to see a more hard and fast answer for, and we certainly need to know how this council is going to deal with it. We'll have towns and villages in Midlothian where you can't get a doctor, you can't get registered with a doctor. We're struggling with teacher numbers, as are many councils. We have major problems with public transport. Our big saviour, the Waverley line that came along in as part of 2008 and the earlier plans that were going to alleviate the roads. We have two trains an hour with two carriages that are regularly full by the time they hit the stations in Midlothian, effectively putting local residents off of getting onto public transport and forcing them back onto cars. There's nothing that we've been told in this chamber at this moment in time as to how we're going to deal with that and what steps are going to be taken to see a better rail service. And areas with massive populations, we've seen big cutbacks on bus services, some of them being half, some of them even worse, some of them being taken away altogether. So we need to see what we're going to do overall about public transport, and there's not enough in this plan to tell us how we're going to deal with that. We've talked about grade separation of Sheriff Hall. That's been on the go for years. Still, there's nothing coming here to show us when this is going to happen. At some stage, we have to say that we need to put a hold on here, that we can't take any further development. We are not going to move that we vote this down, but what we are going to move is that we are not in a position at this stage to ratify this, that we need to have hard and fast answers for the public out there on how we're going to deal with this. How are we in a position where we've got a lack of economic development land to create jobs and employment, and we still see folk flooding into Edinburgh in cars? We're not addressing that properly in this. We need to see how we're going to deal with this. We need to see how we're going to deal with the hard and the soft infrastructure problems, and I don't think there's enough in here to give us that. I would ask that we say no, we're not prepared to sign up to this now, and we'd ask for a seminar at the council where the officers can come forward to show us how they're going to address this problem, because at the moment, as members, we can't continue to go out there to the population who can't get registered with simple and effective things like doctors, new houses without broadband, can't get public transport, just no good enough. We need to say stop just now, take a rest, take a breather, let's see where we are and come forward and give us more information on how we're going to deal with these problems with road infrastructure, public transport infrastructure and just general soft infrastructure.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. I would tend to agree with much of the thrust of what Councillor Milligan just said. I've raised concerns before about our own local development plan that we're not giving sufficient emphasis to light rail, to heavy rail, to public transport systems. Within this document, there's also references to the amount of housing which is needed. It refers specifically to affordable housing, but doesn't say how we're going to get there. I also have one specific worry on, in paragraph 4.20 on responsible resource extraction. I'll read what it says here. It's only quite short. Local development plans will identify coal, oil and gas reserves to support a diverse energy mix, giving sufficient weight to the avoidance of long-term environmental impacts and greenhouse gas emissions from their use. The Scottish Government is currently maintaining a moratorium on granting development consent for unconventional oil and gas development across Scotland. Leaving aside the fact that the long-term environmental impacts can only be minimised by leaving 80% of fossil fuels in the ground, which means we don't explore for any more, my concern specifically here is what responsibilities this lays upon us in the event of any fracking applications which come forward. Now, it says here that local development plans will identify, in this case, gas reserves to support a diverse energy mix. It could be seen that fracking is part of that diverse energy mix. It also says that the Scottish Government's considering a moratorium. Now, a moratorium is not a ban. And a moratorium allows test drilling, it allows exploration, it allows a lot of things which mean that if a moratorium were removed, then fracking can start immediately. A ban could be in place through our planning system, which CESPLAN is part of, to prevent that from happening. So I have some concerns here that we may have responsibilities to fracking companies to help them in the event of that moratorium ending.
Councillor Montgomery.
Thanks, Provost. It may not come as a surprise to anybody that I'm going to raise the Pennycuick rail link again. If you actually look at the reports that are here today, there is a bit of an overlap with the Edinburgh City Region proposal, and I was hoping that the Pennycuick rail link could have been included in that. And for the life of me, when I read this report, and I can see that there's an extension from Garlis Shields to Carlisle being a likely proposal to come at a later stage. Why would I, as a Pennycuick councillor or a Midlothian councillor, be prepared to support that and nobody prepared to support the one to Pennycuick? I think that would actually be, just be abdication of responsibility to the people that I'm representing. All the arguments about the link to Pennycuick, about the environment, the travel, the tourism, the business, was actually put forward in terms of the arguments for the link, rail link to Garlis Shields. And Pennycuick's no any different from that. And for the life of me, why, as I say, why we're not doing this, I really don't know. We need to move this further up the agenda, and we should be pushing a lot harder for this. We're showing no ambition, as far as I'm concerned, when I look at the way this is actually coming back to us from the other five local authorities. They must be rubbing their hands every time we go into negotiations with them, because they seem to be getting everything that they want, and we're getting nothing, as far as I can see. Edinburgh City Region is going to be dominated by the bigger authorities, but that doesn't mean to say we shouldn't be arguing our case. Aberdeen City Region, one of their proposals is going to get a rail link to Peterhead, which is about the same size as Pennycuick and the two biggest towns in Scotland without a rail link. And I think we really need to be doing a hell of a lot more than this. As far as the two trains to Garlis Shields are concerned, Derek, as you said earlier, I'd be quite happy with that at the moment if we could actually get the two, but we've not got any at all. And I will continue to raise this every time I can until we actually get a resolution to this or I'm no longer there, which might happen next year. We'll wait and see what happens. But honestly, as a Pennycuick councillor and a Midlothian councillor, why could I accept supporting a rail link out with the county completely and not actually support one that's actually within our own area? Now, I was in hospital when this was actually last time was debated in the council chamber, and I understand that one of the things that was commented on was that it wasn't an ambitious, it was a very ambitious proposal. Well, it is, and why should it not be? It should be an ambitious council. Another one, and was that the railway station in Pennycuick about a mile from the town centre. Well, S-Bank's not exactly in the next door to Dalkeith or Woodburn. It's further away than the one in Pennycuick would be for the town centre. And it would also be 9 miles closer than the nearest rail link is railway station as we have at the moment. So I see no arguments against this at all. We should be pushing harder for this. And if we keep getting said no, right, that's fine, but we keep pushing for it. You don't just give in at the first negative answer you get for the other five local authorities. We're not pushing hard enough for this, and I'm agreeing with Derek in terms of reserving on this.
Councillor Bryan.
Thank you, Provost. I'd like to ask Ian Johnson, what are the ramifications if the six member authorities turn this down?
Well, my understanding is
if one or more of the six constituent councils do not ratify the plan, then the matter would need to be referred back to the Strategic Development Plan Joint Committee, and they would then need to consider those decisions that one or more councils have made and consider how they wish to deal with the matter and come forward with perhaps a revised proposed plan for further consideration by the constituent councils.
Are the opposition moving that we do not ratify this plan? Councillor Miller.
Yeah, Provost, I formally move that at this stage we don't ratify this, that we ask officers to set up a seminar to try to show us how we can put forward positives in here as to deal with the major infrastructure, soft and hard, that have been identified here today.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. I'll second that.
Can we have a mover for the recommendations in the report? Councillor Bryant.
I move.
I will second.
Thank you. Those in favour of the amendment by, or the motion by Councillor Milligan to not ratify the report, please show.
Nine.
Those against?
Seven.
Those in favour of the report, please, the recommendations in the report, please show.
Seven.
Those against, please show.
Nine.
Item 8.5, the Gorebridge Family Learning Centre, a report by Dr Smith, Director, Education, Communities and the Economy.
Thank you, Provost. This paper updates Council on the further costs associated with setting up the Family Learning Centre within the Gorebridge Beacon project. Section 3 sets out indicative spend, which is still to be finalised, but will ensure that the early years facilities will be compliant with the Care Inspectorate regulations. As discussed at the previous Council meeting, the Family Learning Centre will provide 16 places morning and afternoon for our most vulnerable two-year-olds in one of our priority communities. And the recommendations, the members are asked to consider the recommendations as set out in the paper. Thank you.
Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Provost. Yes, this, in moving the recommendations, I'd just like to stress how important this is in our disadvantaged communities, and the early intervention that this Family Learning Centre will provide will be very useful. So it's very much to be welcomed, and I'm very happy to move this recommendation.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson.
I second these recommendations because I think it's a big opportunity for Gorebridge residents to get their kids school ready and so future proof those children's path into a brighter education.
Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks. Yes, I too welcome this development here. I've had the opportunity to visit and see the space that this has gone into in the hub, and it's an exciting space. I've also had the opportunity to go down to the Woodburn Family Learning Centre and see how that operates. And it's a great thing for the youngsters to be able to attend. So I fully support this, as does our group.
Can I ask the clerk to read out the recommendations of this report, please?
Thanks, Provost. Council is agreeing to note the projected additional cost of setting up a family learning centre in the Gorebridge Beacon and to allocate £70,000 from the Early Years Childcare Grant for the additional costs for setting up the centre. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, just before we finalise the public business, may I just confirm for the record, in terms of item 7, the motion, Councillor Possinger was formally seconding the motion?
Sorry,
Chair, just to clarify, just formally to clarify for the record that in terms of the motion, Councillor Possinger, who'd signed the motion, was also formally seconding it?
Yes, that was on the agenda. It was moved by Councillor Baxter, seconded by Councillor Pottinger. Not seconded, but definitely seconded.
Are you comic, but you'll grow. Okay, we now move out of public business into private business. Could I ask any